Clayton USA Studios in Washington, D.C. This is Rock on the Money. Time to talk about saving, investing, and protecting all those hard-earned monies. We're here to give you ideas, answer questions, keep you updated on your path to retirement and financial independence without any fees or commissions. It's kind of what we do here. I'm Craig with Amanda, your financial coaches, and we're so thankful you've joined us. You can call us 24 hours a day, 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Leave a voicemail or text us with your questions or comments, and we'll answer them on the show. And if you're too shy for all that, you can always email us to podcast@rocklandusa.com. How are you doing, Amanda?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Hey, you know what I want to bring back? I want people to call in with their questions again.
Yes.
And I think we need to bring back the prize.
Did the prize ever go away?
Well, we never promoted it, so we couldn't give it away, and no one called.
Yeah, well, we were ready to give it away. They just had to call.
So what was it, $50?
Gift card to Walmart or Amazon, right?
There we go. So everybody out there, we did this way back in the first few episodes, and we got a lot of phone calls, actually. But we'd like to bring it back again. So if you want to call us and ask us a question, you can leave a voicemail to 989-888-ROCK, 989-888-7625. Don't worry, no one's going to answer the phone. Don't freak out. If you call, leave a voicemail, and ask us a financial question, you'll be in the running for a monthly giveaway of a $50 gift card to Walmart or Amazon.
That's awesome.
And I can't remember why we had two different... Oh, because I used to own the Walmart stock. That's why.
Yeah, said, but you were promoting another company.
Why am I promoting Amazon if I have a stock in Walmart? So anyway, so please do the voicemails. We'd love to hear your voices. Nobody wants to hear me.
I would.
Hey, a quick update, whether you want to share or not. Hey, what happened to your rental properties? How'd that go?
Well, as in the rest of life, their life is full of surprises. So one of them was going very well. It's on the market, ready to rent. And the other transaction fell through the morning of the closing. So 50-50.
Well, that sucks. But you got one, though. Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yep. And we're looking for more. So still in the game.
You're amazing. Hey, what do we got coming up on this episode?
It's a big episode today. Ugh. We've got a couple social media questions, so keep those coming in. We're going to talk about buying stuff using a payroll deduction. That sounds like an interesting one. Craig is going to walk us through baby step number 5 in our series on the Dave Ramsey baby steps, which will also include a conversation about college savings plans. And then we'll wrap it up with a savvy savings segment with the long-awaited budgeting basics. We're going to start talking about budgeting today.
Great. Hey, how about I throw the first social media question at you?
Yeah, let's do it.
I finally convinced my friend to switch her stuff, and we're going to do it tomorrow. Is this a bad thing to go through with the S&P 500 index at an all-time high?
Well, I'm an optimist, so I think every day is going to be an all-time high. So you might as well get in now before tomorrow when it's at another all-time high. In all seriousness, this is just another form of trying to time the market. So we talked before about dollar cost averaging.
Yeah.
What do you think, Craig?
Well, if she's making changes to her 401k or IRA, she just should just roll that thing over her current balances. And then I guess let her payroll take care of the deposits over time what I would do.
My suggestion, though, is roll the whole amount over to your account, but don't move it out of the cash portion of your IRA into an actual fund all at once. I would spread those over time.
And that's if she even has any in a cash portion. You know, she may have it all in funds. So, yeah, everybody, just please just get that money where it needs to be. Let's say you did that last year when it was up, 31%?
Yeah.
So if you had not done it all in January and you spread it out, you would have actually not got your 31% because your money wasn't in there. So mm-hmm. nobody has a crystal ball. I hate to tell you this, but those people on CNBC they keep interviewing that are from the big companies. How many times have they been wrong over the last 10 years? They keep saying we're at a bubble. We're at a bubble. Well, every year we keep going up. Yeah,
they're right only slightly more often than the weatherman.
Right. If I did what they told me to do, I would have missed all this money. And nobody knows. I mean, it could go down tomorrow. I don't know. Who knows? The only way you can make money is you got to be in the market. So please, God.
Yep.
I see a lot of people in our group that are trying to time the market and they have all these crazy strategies. They probably read in Money Magazine or over Reddit or some other Facebook group. Guys, keep it simple. Just get your money in there. If you have it, just do it. You know what I mean?
Just do it.
Ugh, just do it. Second question for you, Amanda.
Okay.
I am just wondering what you think about finance apps like Personal Capital. By the way, they are not a sponsor whatsoever. To keep track of everything in one place. Thank you for any advice.
Yeah, so I did look into it. I don't personally use Personal Capital. I actually, as much as I'm into apps, I don't have an app for my finances. Well, I use Google Sheets, so I am an old spreadsheet user, you know, so I keep all of our budgeting there, but not an actual app. Because I haven't found one that I loved for me that was exactly the way I liked it, so I just made my own. Yeah. But this is I did some research. And it looks like it's a really great free tool, and it's great for looking at all of your financial life. You know, it ties together your banking, your investment, retirement, credit card, mortgage, real estate assets, and it updates them so you can see and track your net worth over time. And then once you've linked all of your accounts, your dashboard shows you high-level overview of those pieces of your finances. It does look like it's not real strong in budgeting. So it's more about net worth and investments than it is for budgeting. But there's another great tool out there, mint.com, which I actually did use in the past and I liked it. But that is a better budgeting tool and that one's free. Dave Ramsey offers some budgeting tools as well, but there's a cost associated with that to get the same features that you get for free on mint.com.
Right.
About the Personal Capital is it looks like it has really nice calculators to see how much your funds are costing you. You know, we've talked a lot in the past about the costs associated with the advisor fees or management fees in each of these funds. And so it'll show you like you think just a small percentage isn't going to really impact you, but you can use a calculator there and see how like you might be losing $100,000 by the time you retire just in fees.
Isn't the back end of that, they have things to sell you. So because you see what the fees are, they're going to compete with that. Isn't there some, I know it's free, but they're trying to lure you into other, you don't have to pay for the services, but.
You don't have to, no. Right. I did notice on some reviews that some people, and this is anecdotal, I have no evidence to say.
Yeah, I don't either.
But one of the reviews did say that he noticed receiving more like mailers, solicitation mail. So I haven't personally looked into their privacy policies to see what they do with your data, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're selling it and getting their money that way or through ads. And then, of course, there are some paid management options there that I'm sure they'd love for you to use.
Of course. Yeah. Everybody always has a free option and then this other stuff comes on. Unlike us, Amanda, we don't have payment tiers whatsoever.
Nope.
It's all free, guys. Hey, let's do a real quick topic before we get into baby step five.
It's a baby topic.
It really has nothing to do with baby step five. But this topic, it just so happened to show up on another Facebook group that I'm in. And it upset me so much. I just wanted to briefly talk about this thing. Have you ever heard of these companies that work with your own payroll department or with your company in order so you can get payroll deductions to purchase like TVs, toasters, blenders, sports equipment? Have you ever heard of this?
I've never heard of this. No, never.
There's a company called PaycheckWorks.com. And they enable you to sign up and I guess the employer makes it all happen because it's coming out of the paycheck.
Yeah.
So you can go over to this website at paycheckworks.com. And guys, you can go over there and look at the catalog. You can purchase like a 65-inch TV and just have it automatically deducted from your paycheck in installments to buy it.
Hmm.
You know what the problem with it is?
It's more debt.
Well, it is a form of debt.
If I were a guessing and a betting person, my guess is that there's huge interest rates.
Yeah. What are those rent-to-own places that you see in shopping centers? What are those called? One starts at R. I don't know. I can't remember what they're called. But anyway, this is like one of those rent-to-own type of things. So I went and looked at just a random thing, like a Roku, a TCL Roku TV, which I really recommend the TCL TVs. I think they're low cost. They're great quality. So I went and found the same TV at Best Buy and the one at this paycheckworks.com. You know what the price difference was of this thing?
Mm-mm.
It was like $500 difference.
Hmm.
For the convenience of having it taken out of your paycheck.
Yeah.
It was, if you were to reverse engineer it, a lot of these prices I was looking at were anywhere from 30 to 60% interest rates. If you were to take what they were charging and then what you could get at a local store.
Yeah. I mean, it just goes back to the adage, you know, if you can't afford it, you can't buy it.
Yeah. The way the system is out there, it's almost like Amazon or any of these other websites. They take away the pain point. The easiest way for you to get from what you want to getting it in your house or in your pocket, or that's what they remove. And this is just another form because it's coming out of your paycheck, so you don't feel the pain. You know, it's just, I don't like it.
Until you get your paycheck and it's a lower amount.
And then these, and Amanda, was it 68% live paycheck to paycheck? Yeah. This is why you're living paycheck to paycheck. Just another reason. This is the leakage that you've talked about.
Leakage, yep. Leakage. I'm going to coin that.
We need budget to make t-shirts. Leakage. Stop the leakage. Mm-hmm. People are going to think they had Taco Bell or something. All right. Baby step five. Hey, can you help me with this? Can you recap what 1 through 4 is on the baby steps?
Sure.
I caught you off guard.
What is this, like a pop quiz?
No. You know, we start at 1 with 1,000.
Yeah, you'll have to help me out, I think. Step one, you want to have a small emergency fund of $1,000, unless your annual income is what, $25,000 or less a year, then it would only be $500. And then after that, then you're going to do your debt snowball, right?
Yeah, we're doing debt snowballs.
And then except for your mortgage.
Mm-hmm. No mortgage yet.
All right, help me out. What are the
And now we're
ones,
doing right? baby step three, which baby is your three? Fully funded emergency
fully
fund.
Fully funded emergency fund. So 3 to 6 months worth of emergency funds in case something comes up.
And baby step four, we're up to the 15%.
15%.
Into your investments. And you're hopefully you have a 401k at work. If not, then you got to go over and create a IRA account at one of our favorite low-cost providers. And put your 15%
Schwab, Fidelity, and
Vanguard.
You know, I can only ever remember 2 out of 3, and it's always a different 2.
Here's just real quick.
That's how you know they're not paying us.
That's right.
If they were paying me, I'd remember.
Yeah, they're
for
not
sure.
paying. Guys, we have no sponsors whatsoever. But here's real quick before I start in this baby step five. Here's something you guys need to know. Both Amanda and I have been working all day. When we record these podcasts, what time are we doing this, Amanda?
Oh, it's always late, and my brain is always fried by the time I get here.
Amanda's a lawyer. She does, you know, real estate stuff. She is like worn out that I'm doing it. So sometimes we get a little like what's going on? Because we're so busy
like,
helping
I know
you
these
guys.
Baby steps, but you caught me off guard, and my brain is dead at
I know.
This point of the day.
Yeah, we work really hard answering. We get so many instant messages, emails, and we're helping so many people. And plus, we have our jobs to do. And so, it's easy for us to get a little sidetracked when we're doing this. All right, baby step number five.
Well, thanks for covering for me, Craig.
Hey, I'm here for you.
It was a blonde moment.
I didn't say that. Just for the record. Hey, baby, here's what we do with baby steps 1, 2, and 3. We're doing those in order. We don't jump. And as we said in the last episode, episode 20, baby step four, now we're doing baby steps 4, 5, and 6 simultaneously. You can do them all at the same time, okay?
Well, but I have a question about that. Sure. What if you can only afford to do one at a time?
Well, then we only do one at a time.
And they are still in a priority. 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, we do 4 first. If you can't do 5, well, and we're going to actually talk about 5 here right now about, you know, if you can't do this, you can't do it, okay?
Yeah.
Because here's the one thing I always say, and I'm not encouraging people to get college loans whatsoever. You know, there's a time and place for everything. We're not going to get in that debate whether you should get college loans or not. We'll talk about that here in a second. But you can always get a college loan, but you can't get a retirement loan, right?
That's right. And like I've said before, you need to put on your own mask before assisting others. So you have to take care of you and your own retirement before you worry about your kids' college. Your kids are going to figure it out one way or the other. You figured it out, they'll figure it out.
That's right. We're not advocating college loans. And we took care of that back in baby step two. If we had college loans to take care of, we're not talking about the kids' loans, okay? Here's a couple of stats about just college loans before we talk about what you should do about planning for college, okay? Just real quick. I know stats can get boring, but this is amazing, Amanda. Americans owe $1.4 trillion, that was a T, trillion dollars in loan debt. In 2016, it's estimated students graduate with an average of $37,172 of student loan debt.
Yeah, and plus, that's not even taken into consideration. They probably owe about the same amount on a car.
Right, and they probably racked up credit cards in that same process along that way. Like you said, those credit card companies hit them hard at the campuses.
They do.
Yeah.
It's very predatory.
Approximately 44 million Americans have student loan debt. That's a lot. That's a big percentage.
Yeah.
The delinquency rate, people not paying them in 90 days or they're in default, is 11.2% of all the student loans.
Yeah, so 1 in 10 people are behind or in default on their student loans.
Right. And
that's pretty significant.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about delinquency before. You can't bankrupt student loans. So that's a whole nother animal. Let's talk about the cost of college. The average private four-year college tuition is $32,500 a year. That's high.
It is high. So you do the math times 4 or 5. Oh, a lot of times now it's hard to graduate in 4.
You're right.
But let's say, but we'll be optimistic, say by 4, that's $130,000 if I did the math right in my head.
You're the lawyer.
Let me see. Let me try my calculator. 32,500 times 4. Look at that. See?
Look at that.
I redeemed myself.
Yes. Even at nighttime. Hey, the average public 4-year out of state, that's the difference, out of state college tuition is average $24,000 a year. So that
was $96,000 over 4 years.
See, I can do that one. That was my easy one. You took it from me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The average 4-year in state college tuition is $9,500 a year. Look at that price drop. If you went to an out of state versus in state.
And but you know what is interesting, Craig? Since my son is in college, I have a little bit more personal insight into this.
Absolutely.
These are just tuition costs. These are not room and board. these are not like your housing fees and your, you know.
I thought that books. Same thing when I put down these notes. I'm like, man, you're forgetting all the housing, the food.
Yeah. You know,
food plans and the books and all that crap.
A lot of them require mandatory dorms the first year. So there's no getting away from that.
Yeah. And you talked about that in another episode.
Add another, you know, $9,000 a year.
Isn't that insane? So the average public 2-year community college is $3,500 a year. But like you just said, if you're doing community college, a lot of times they can live at home.
Right.
So there's a lot of costs, extra costs that are eliminated. So anyway, so what would be a good way? These are just some ideas. This is almost like savvy savings, Amanda.
That's right.
Hopefully I'm not stealing anything from you. But here's some ideas of how to go to college the right way. Okay. Mm-hmm. And please comment on anything that you see in this list. Okay, Amanda. Sure. First, start at an affordable school and then transfer after 2 years. Like, start at community college. Of course, it's very dependent on what you're taking.
Yeah.
But for a lot of degrees out there, you may be able to do your first 2 years at your community college at what I say, $3,500 a year, and then transfer.
And some, like I know in Wisconsin, there's another option. They have like satellite campuses that aren't, that only focus on the fundamentals for the first 2 years. And they're still like University of Wisconsin schools, but they are not the 4 year schools. You go there, you do your base classes, and then you transfer into one of the other schools in the system.
Great.
So that's another option.
Go to a school that offers in-state tuition, as we just talked about, because the cost difference is dramatic between out-of-state. You know what gets me is some parents, because they went to, I shouldn't pick on Ohio because that'll probably upset a bunch of people, but all these people that went, their parents went to Ohio, so they think, and now they live like in Maryland or Virginia, and now they feel like their kids have to go there too. But now you're paying the out-of-state.
Or so, strapping your kids with an out-of-state tuition.
All because of you want tradition. Is that really worth it?
Yeah. And the other thing I would say there is sometimes you can look, depending on where you live, some states have reciprocity with other states. So you might have a little bit more of an option there. Like in Wisconsin, you could pay in-state tuition in Minnesota. That's what I did when I was in school. I went to Minnesota, but I was able to pay in-state tuition because there's an agreement between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Oh, wow.
A number of different states have those types of things. So you just have to look into it wherever you are and see if that's an option. If you're really have your heart set on getting as far away from mom and dad as possible and still pay in state.
Take college courses while in high school to start credits. Both my kids did that.
That's a genius hack right there.
Yes.
Because you're getting it for free.
Yes.
Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for those credits.
It's all those basic courses you can knock out too. You know, choose a practical major. That right there,
like,
is
not
a big
art
deal.
History.
Hard basket. Everyone uses basket weaving as an example. But you know what? There's a lot of careers out there. We all know they're going to be gone in about 5 or 10 years, but they still exist, and a lot of people take them.
Yeah.
Or like the ever popular communications degree. You know, you and about 5 billion other people have the same degree. So.
Right.
You know, you're also driving the cost. What is that degree really going to make when you get out? Are you being able to pay back your loans if you chose that route?
Right.
Now, if you get into nursing, teaching, I mean, we could sit here and go through. Engineering is like, you know, the king out there. But teaching, nursing, engineering, all the STEMs.
Yeah.
All
like
that
computer
stuff.
Courses. Yes.
You know, we could spend a whole time going through the other ones. So anyway, attend a trade school. That's a big one right now.
That's a brilliant one. Yep. Those skills or those jobs aren't really going anywhere.
No.
You're always going to need a plumber.
And
you can't really outsource that to India.
Right. When you're building a high rise, robots are not building those anytime soon. It's so custom. I mean,
don't
come
give
on.
Elon Musk any ideas.
No, he's too busy putting shingles on roofs now, and his stock is skyrocketing. It's crazy.
He'll be making drones to build houses.
Yes. Fill out your FAFSA forms. You know, the free application.
We talked about that before. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to really put time and effort into that. That's like your resume for applying for a job. You know what I mean?
So it's not that hard, Craig.
You just
have to have your tax return in front of you, basically. And you don't even have to, because you can connect it to your IRS account and then automatically fill it in.
Yep.
So it's like, you know, 20 to 30 minutes out of your life once a year. But you have to do it in order to be eligible for consideration for any of the scholarships at your school.
Right. And you know what? We're sitting here talking about all this stuff, but you know what? Your kids themselves need to put a lot of effort into this as well. And one way they need to do it.
Because it has, the FAFSA is based on your parents' income.
Right.
So,
but one way your kids can put a lot of effort into it, they got to do well in their ACT and their SATs, because that will open up the door to a lot of grants and other sources of income.
Yeah. And if you don't do well the first time, you know, you consider taking it again and improving your score.
I know someone that took it 4 times and they increased every time.
My son took it twice, and he actually boosted his score by 5 whole points on the ACT.
Awesome.
Just a couple of months.
Yeah. Apply for scholarships. There's so many. You may be more familiar with the websites for that because my kids are now older. But each year, students leave billions of dollars of grants and scholarship money unclaimed. You know, a couple of years ago, they said there was $3 billion unclaimed in a single year.
Yeah. And so what I do is I kind of just do like a brainstorming session. Think about, well, what kind of socioeconomic category do we fall into? And then Google scholarships for that. What kind of family makeup do you have? And then Google scholarships for that. Has anything of significance happened in your life? Like, are you a single parent? Google scholarships for that. Or are you the first college student in your family? There are scholarships for that. Are you going into a certain industry? You know, there's lots of scholarships depending on whatever your major is that are very specific to those majors. So make a whole list of things that apply to you and your circumstance and what you want to do, and then start Googling and use the word scholarship next to all those words and see what comes up.
I'm not endorsing divorce whatsoever. However, I know there are couples that divorce on purpose on paper in order to qualify for scholarships and grants. I know that's a fact. There's a lot of people that are gaming the system. I'm not saying people should go out and divorce. There's a whole other world of people of how they game the system to get this money.
Well, some of those people are going to prison right now. Let's not talk about that.
Becky. Hey, students Students can work part-time during high school and college. You know what I hear a lot? But my poor little Johnny needs to be studying. Yeah, I hate to tell you, little Johnny isn't studying.
Yeah.
No. Which gets into our next number 10, manage the college lifestyle. Didn't you have a whole Savvy Savings about that?
Yeah. We'll have to go back and take a look at that. But
it was like about 15 episodes ago. Finish your school in 4 years by not skipping classes, actually going to class.
Go to class, pass your class. Make sure you take enough credits every semester to get out of there in 4 years. You know, a fifth year is very costly because you have to also pay for housing and there's opportunity cost for not being in the job market.
Right.
It's very costly.
You know, my son had to do a 5-year, but his degree actually was a 5-year degree,
which is weird.
That's an oddball number, but aeronautical engineering apparently is a 4.5-year degree. So, there is a stat out there that says if you sit towards the front, I tried to go find it. I couldn't find it. If you sit towards the front of the class and you never skip, the chances of you finishing in 4 years is like it's such a high percentage. I mean, it's way up there. I know I heard it on a podcast. I couldn't find the note. I wrote it down somewhere. Anyway, just don't skip classes. Is there a pay in full discount for tuition? Apparently this exists, Amanda, at some places. I did not know that. So talk to the registrar or
that does surprise me because most schools require that you pay in full.
That's true.
There's not many offering payment plans.
Yeah, no, I wonder if it was like if you pay the full 4 or not.
Oh, yeah.
The full 4 years up front.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That seems like quite a risk.
Yeah, what was it? 56% of freshmen don't make it to year 2?
Yeah, I don't know.
Something like that. I think it's 56%. Which is a whole nother, but you're still stuck with that loan.
Yeah.
And if feasible, parents should save for their kids' college via a 529 or ESA. 529s didn't show up till my kids were already in high school. So I did not use that. Do you have any knowledge on this?
I do. I have lots of knowledge on this. Should we talk about it after the break?
Yes, actually, let's talk about it after the break. That sounds good. Hey, we'll be right back after this. You're listening to Rock on the Money with Craig and Amanda. Welcome back to 529 is the most exciting topic ever. 529 is a prepaid tuition plan. It's a part of Baby Step 5. Baby Step 5, what we're doing is we're trying to think about how you should do college the right way, what it costs, and then how can we do it? So now we're up to the 529. So we're trying to get, like, I know we're kind of overdoing this Baby Step 5, but it's really a serious topic, and there are so many different ways to handle this. You have some knowledge of the 529s, don't you?
I do, because, you know, anything tax code related is super exciting, and I have knowledge on that.
Yes!
So that's why it's called a 529 plan, by the way, is it's related to the tax code. But a 529 plan is a tax advantage savings plan, and it's designed to encourage saving for future education costs. They're legally known as qualified tuition plans. They're sponsored by states, not the federal government. Mm-hmm. State agencies or educational institutions. So you have to, they're state specific. You'd have to open one in whatever state you're currently a resident of. But there's two different types. One is a prepaid tuition fees and education savings plan, and the other one is more like your traditional type of IRA investments. All 50 states and the District of Columbia sponsor at least one type of 529 plan. You may or may not have both options available to you. And then also a group of private colleges and universities sponsor a prepaid tuition plan as well. So what's the difference? Well, the prepaid tuition plans, they let you save it or purchase units of credits at a participating college or university. Usually these are the public or in-state ones. Since it's a state-sponsored program, they are encouraging you to go to a state school. So, but they'll let you prepay. That's where they get the clever name from, prepay for future tuition and mandatory fees at the current prices for your beneficiary. Okay. So you know how the cost of college is going up astronomically year over year? Mm. You could lock in today's prices for your college student who maybe is not going to college for another 10, 15 years. We did it for my son. We used the Florida prepaid tuition plan back when we were living in Florida the first time. And you can also lock in your in-state status by using a prepaid plan. So even if you leave the state, you'd still have the option to use in-state tuition if you had a prepaid tuition plan in place.
Oh, nice.
The nice thing is that there's some flexibility there as well. So obviously, we've talked before, my son's going to college not in Florida, but in Wisconsin. You don't lose that money. It's there. It's your money. You've paid it in. We just had to cash it out, and then we applied it to, I just cashed it out and put it into a traditional 529, but you can also just have the plan pay the tuition directly to the school of your choice. They would just send a check, but there's some weird calculations and math in there, and it's not really a one-to-one match. So in our case, we decided just to put it into our separate 529 and use it that way. So the prepaid option plan is really cool. You do monthly payments, or you could just prepay all at once if you happen to have money set aside now and want to just lock in today's rate. I think it's really a great way to get not only to save for the future, but also to have a really great savings on the total cost down the road.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah. So again, they're not guaranteed. The other option then are the education savings plans. So they let you open an investment account and save for your beneficiary's future using basically, it's one of, and Craig, you're going to hate this, but it is a target date fund usually.
You know what though? Just real quick, I actually prefer that with these because it's a risk. It's a shorter time frame. We're not looking at 20, 30 years. Some of these cases, it's only 10. No, I do prefer not being too aggressive. So I'm okay.
So you are limited to only choosing between target date funds, but you can choose different allocations. Like you don't have to put it all into the target date for the exact year that you expect your student to start. For us, we decided to do a three-way split between super aggressive, a very conservative one, and then a moderately aggressive one. Because again, I have a higher risk tolerance because I have backup plans in place if something were to happen to this fund, but it just gives us a little bit more flexibility, but they are all target date funds to choose from. Usually I haven't seen any options where you have all the flexibility you have like in your retirement fund for selecting your own ETFs. So when we talk about qualified higher education expenses. There's a very narrow list of items that qualify for these expenses. So that would be like your tuition, mandatory fees, and room and board. So those are really the only things that you can pull the money out for. So you can't just pull money out and say, oh, I needed to pay my parking fees, because those aren't necessarily mandatory fees. And that's just an example. You'd want to look into whether or not that particular fee qualifies. If your child decides not to go to school, you don't lose that money. You can always get your money back out at any time. And just, there are, of course, some bureaucratic forms to fill out and hoops to jump through, but you don't lose the money just because the beneficiary decides not to go to school. You can also transfer it to a different beneficiary. Like, let's say you have multiple kids and your oldest decides, nope, college isn't for me. I'm an entrepreneur. I'm opening my own business, or something else that's very exciting. You can always transfer it to someone else and they could get that benefit. So that's basically the college education funds. Again, they are in mutual funds. They're not federally guaranteed, so they can lose money just like your retirement fund can. That's something to keep in mind as well.
So I went and found the ratings on the different states. Even though you live in one state, you can use another 529 plan. You can use one in another state. I don't think a lot of people realize that. I mean, you may not get some of the tax benefits, but some states, because they're run by other companies for the state, can charge some fees that you don't like, or the paperwork is awful. So I found a list of the best ones in the United States really quick. And you know what's funny about the top 10 is they all say Vanguard or Fidelity.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that is like so you're not opening the fund with your state. You're opening it with a financial institution.
Right. And it's just interesting how we keep saying Fidelity, Schwab, and Vanguard, and the best ones happen to be run by Fidelity or Vanguard. I don't think Schwab does it. I think that's why they're not in there. But really quick, in alphabetical order, Arizona, California, Delaware, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Mexico, New York, Ohio, and my favorite, and the one I've heard is probably the best in the United States, is Utah, the My 529 in Utah, which is run by Vanguard, an age-based portfolio. So I'll post that on the website, and I'll put the reference where I got all this information. The honor roll, there's four of them that are okay. They're not in the top list. Is Georgia, Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Wisconsin, the EdVest 529 college savings plan. So,
So you can either open it with your state, or you can open it with your financial institution. Like the Florida prepaid one, we did through the actual plan, the Florida plan. But when we went and opened a 529, we just did it with our USAA bank.
Yeah. Where I live in Maryland, no, apparently it's no good. So there you go.
I'm sure it's good. It's just not as good.
Yeah. Just got to be really careful about the fees and really check into it a little bit more. But the other states I talked about, apparently they're really good. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know what it's time for?
Savvy Savings.
The part where I can take a break. Then again, you just did a whole 529 thing.
I know. Yeah. You've been on a break.
Savvy Savings. What are we doing today, Amanda?
Well, we've been talking about it for a couple months now. I can't believe that we were going to talk about budgeting.
Yes.
Today is the day.
Yes. It's so exciting to do a budget. But you know what, though? If you don't do, I just talked to some coworkers about this. You got to know where the money is. You got to know where every dollar is. So tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm going to break it down in we're going to do a couple of segments on budgeting over the course of the next few shows, because there's just so much to talk about with budgeting. You could talk about it for hours. But today, I'm going to call it step one, is just to figure out where you are. So like if you walk into a mall and you're looking for a store, you go up to the mall directory. First of all, you have to figure out, I am here, star on the map, right? Mm-hmm. Before you can figure out where you're going to go. So this is where we're at. We're trying to figure out where are we on this map before we can figure out how do we get to where we want to be.
Mrs. Fields cookies.
Yeah. Oh, or Cinnabon. I love Cinnabon. So step one, so budgeting, I know we could talk about it for hours, but it's really super simple when you think about just the basics. There's really two sides of budgeting. How much do you make and how much do you spend?
Yes.
That's it.
Really? That's it?
But it's so hard, we can go home, Amanda. Now. Segment over.
Yep. Segment's over.
Done. So first of all, well, what's your income? So when you think about your income, and you're going to want to get a notepad out and probably sit down with your significant other. This is really important that you do this together. You know, what's your income? And I like to calculate income based off of take home pay versus gross. Mm-hmm. So it's not helpful to me to look at, I make, you know, and I'm just going to use a random number, not my own. But if you're making $45,000 a year in salary, that's not what you're actually taking home. Yeah. So unless you're really good at budgeting, here's my line item for taxes. Here's my line item for Medicare and all that. I just figure that's already budgeted by my W-4. So leave that to the HR to figure that out. So I would just use your take home pay. So what is the actual amount that you get paid by check? Either every week, every other week, twice a month, once a month, you know, what is your take home pay? I find that to be much more useful. Mm-hmm. And you want to include things from your wages to your side gigs, to anything that you anticipate bringing in as a bonus maybe, or other income. But it's helpful when you're actually doing budgeting to predict what your minimum predictable monthly income is. So, and then I would just put all those other things like bonuses into a separate category that you would use separately. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have irregular income, it's going to be a little bit more tricky, but I would base your budget off of the minimum that you expect to make every month. And then you can decide what you're going to do with any month that has an excess above that minimum.
We have a lot of people in our audience that has irregular income. Firefighters, flight attendants, a lot of people, waitresses, everybody. Yeah, we have a lot of these people listening, so.
Yeah, so it's a little trickier. I've never really had that situation. I've always had a predictable income in general, except for my side gigs. But how do you handle that, Craig?
I've never had an equal paycheck ever in my life. Even the fire department, it's always different. So let's take the fire department for example. They get paid every 2 weeks, where I used to be in the Washington, D.C. or Northern Virginia. The lowest possible paycheck would be 96 hours. Okay. So they average 56 hours a week. I know that sounds crazy. People working, it's 212 hours per month is what the monthly income is. That's what the average is. Sometimes they have a 120 paycheck. Sometimes it's 96 hours. Sometimes it's 144 hours. That's like you were saying, that's the extra over and above. But 96 would be the one you want to budget on.
I wouldn't base a budget off of overtime. That's just, even if you've been getting overtime consistently, it doesn't take much at all for a company to say, you know what? Nope. As of today, we're cutting out all overtime. I've seen that happen time and time again to people I know. And then, your whole budget's based off of, expected overtime, and then it's gone just like that.
And some people only get one paycheck a month, which this is why your budget thing is very important. Because if you run out, it's not every 2 weeks. Like flight attendants only get paid once a month.
Or like in the military, it's only twice a month. So it's amazing how much there's even a little more challenge in your budgeting skills when you go from every other week to twice a month. Because that second paycheck every month is... Sometimes it can be half a week to a week later than what it would be if you were every other week. If you're going from every other week, which is 26 paychecks a year, to twice a month, that's only 24. You're getting two less checks a year.
Yeah.
That's not insignificant. So you do have to have good month. I base budgets off of a month. Some people do it by their pay period. I like to say month because that's generally the cycle that you have regular expenses, household expenses. Yes. So that's what makes most sense to me. Mm-hmm. So speaking of which, that's the other side of the scale. Write down your monthly expenses. So we're just, if you're just starting out with budgeting, I promise you, you're going to get it wrong when you do this the first time. That's okay. It's okay. Because that'll be a learning experience as well. But you're going to be better off and further ahead than if you don't write anything down. So start with the basics. You know, how much a month do you think you're spending on food, and how much do you think you can limit yourself to spend on food? Shelter, that's a little bit easier to predict, mm-hmm. because you know what your rent is or your mortgage payment. What are your anticipated utilities? Generally, they're around the same amount. Now, if you are in a geographic region that has vast differences in temperature year round, you might have to take into consideration that, you know, your heating bill would be really high some months, and then, you know, maybe your gas bill is higher one month, your electricity is different. So figure that out by looking at the last year worth of bills. You'll want to include things like clothing, transportation. And then once you've covered your basic needs, list out all the other expenses that you have each month, like entertainment, eating out, pan flute lessons. I don't know, whatever you're doing.
Pan flute?
Basket weaving lessons. I don't know. Television streaming, gym memberships, giving or tithing, your savings. So remember, your 529 and your IRA contributions should have their own line item. Those are now expenses in your budget. They're not just an afterthought. So make sure you're putting all of those down. Once you write down all your income and all your expenses, the balance of that, your income minus your expenses, should equal zero. It's really, that's it. That's simple. It's basic math. If you're leaving money in your account, so let's say you have a positive amount left over, you shouldn't. You're going to spend it. So you need to tell that money what it should be doing so that you are putting your money to its best use. If you have leftover money, you know, that just means you have more to put or direct towards your retirement fund or some other thing that you're saving for, maybe your emergency fund, if that's where you're at. If you do that math, your income minus your expenses, and it's a negative number, that's a problem. So that means you're running at a deficit. I talked to someone this week who is short $1,800 a month on their monthly budget.
What?
So I don't know how sustainable that is without going into bankruptcy. So.
Wow.
So you do have to evaluate that, and there's two things to do to bring that number into balance. And one is to increase your income. The other is to cut expenses. That's it. Those are your two options.
Okay.
It's not rocket science, but it's hard to implement. Today, I just wanted to focus a little bit more on a deep dive on your current spending habits. So some people, you know, you can sit down and list your basics or what you think are your basic expenses. But I think this will be an eye-opening exercise for some people. When I first started budgeting, I had a class in graduate school. Man, that was a long time ago, on finances. And we had an assignment to take a journal with you every day. It was like a little pocket journal. Nowadays, you could use your smartphone with the notepad option. But for one full week, write down every penny you spend. So if it's a vending machine purchase or a coffee, or you're going to the gas station and putting gas in your car, or you're paying your telephone bill, every purchase, every penny you spend, write it down. And that's about helping you to identify what's actually going on. So, you know, like the 12 steps program for alcoholics, the first step is admitting you have a problem, right? So you need to identify, where are we? Where are we on our map? You don't have to necessarily change your behavior during this step, but you might find that you do that anyway because you're having to actually confess and admit to what you're spending, and you have some accountability because now it's going in writing. I find the same thing happens when I want to lose weight and I just start tracking what I'm eating. You think twice about, oh, do I want to eat that donut? Because I'm going to have to write it down, and then it's, you know, there in my journal that I failed.
Yeah.
So at the end of the week, though, sit down and determine what categories did you spend on during that week and how much, and then figure out, does that change what you need to budget in your monthly budget, or are you in line? Does it align with what you had guessed? The other tip you can do there, Craig, is most banks have, you have online banking. You can check your accounts for the last 6 months by just downloading your statements. A lot of them let you export into Excel spreadsheets, and you can sort and categorize very easily there and do some fancy pivot tables and charts. Or, like we talked about earlier today, the Mint.com budgeting app, you can just connect your bank account there and it will categorize for you and help you with the budgeting. That makes it super easy. And then, yeah, just sort by merchant. You can add labels for like date nights, concerts, gas, fast food, dry cleaning, etc. That's about it. Anything to add?
No, that sounds great.
Yeah. So if you're already struggling with your expenses, I would say now is not the time to add another expense with some kind of fancy budgeting tool or new notebook. Or, you know, it's easy to get tempted into, well, I'm going to start this new program. Let me pull up Amazon and figure out what's the best budgeting notebook out there that I can ship. You just need a piece of paper.
Yeah, guys, you all have a piece of paper. You have a pen. Sit down, turn off Netflix for a few minutes. And actually, the first time you do this could take you 1 to 2 hours to do it. But once you do it, you know, and remember, every month gets a budget. So once you have a template, you're rolling it into the next one because every month is different. You know why it's bad for men? Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Our budget's different in February.
Yeah, and that's a good point. And we can talk about that a little bit more in future episodes. But yeah, every month's going to be a little different. Some months, you might, you know, Christmas is one month. Birthdays are in different months. Yeah. If you have everyone in your family has a birthday in December, like my sister, her whole family is in December in addition. Like three kids and a husband, they're all December birthdays plus Christmas.
That sucks.
It does suck for everyone.
I mean, that sounds like a joyous time.
It's also very stressful for her.
I can relate. Well, thank you very much, Amanda. What are we going to do on the next episode
we're going to do a dive into the envelope system.
I've never done that.
You've never done it.
I know of it, but I've never done it.
Talk about envelope systems. Again, you don't need to buy fancy envelopes. It's just whatever you have lying around. But we'll talk about that next time. And then I did want to say one more thing about the balancing, the income and expenses balancing out. If it's completely impossible to make that balance by increasing your income or removing your expenses. And Craig, you probably know this. Dave Ramsey suggests, you know, make a list and put them in and prioritize them. And if someone falls below the line of when your money runs out, they just don't get paid.
Yep.
Yep. So I don't know if you want to dive into that anymore, or we can save that for next time.
We'll save that. I think we wore them out on this episode. that's like a whole nother category about bills and how to pay them. And we're going to go back to some of these baby step things and really get a little nitty gritty on some of these, you know.
All right.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out our website, rockonthemoney.com, for all the previous episodes. We have articles, show notes, everything right there. Plus links directly to all of the podcast platforms where you can easily subscribe to the podcast, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and many others. We really do appreciate all of your support. We have a lot of gratitude that you took the time to check us out. We really do appreciate it. Send us an email and tell us what you think to podcast@rocklandusa.com. So long, everybody. We'll see you again next time on Rock on the Money. America's Rockland USA. All opinions expressed by the host are solely their own and do not reflect the views of any company, affiliates, or advertisers. Investments or strategies mentioned in the show may not be suitable for you. Before acting on any information in the show, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial or investment advisor.